Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest this week will be Nellie Thompson Kapoor. She is the executive director of Green Beats, which is a nonprofit organization that empowers elementary and middle school students to navigate our food system and to make better choices. And I'll be having her come on in just a little bit and tell you more about her when she does. But first, I want to go over some things going on in and around the city, some things in the news that you want to know about, and, of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So first, I wanted to share with you an article that I read this week in the New York Times about intermittent fasting. And since this article has come out, I can't believe how many people I have met who are doing it. It seems to be the new fad, and I don't know if it's really just a fad, though. It seems like it's a really great thing. What intermittent fasting is allowing your body to have 16 hours a day of no food coming in. And what that does is it allows your body to use up all of the stored energy and glucose that's in the liver for 10 to 12 hours. And then once that's finished using up what's stored in the liver, it switches over to using the fat that is stored in fat tissue. And so it can do that for 4 hours a day if you don't eat for 16 hours. And it sounds like a long time to not eat for 16 hours, but I know so many times if I skip breakfast, I'm less hungry by lunchtime than if I eat breakfast. If I eat breakfast, comes around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, I'm really ready for lunch. But if I skip breakfast, just have my cup of black coffee or tea, I can make it to lunch really easily, painlessly, and just skip breakfast. And I know for years we were told breakfast was the most important meal, don't skip breakfast, but I'm not convinced. This seems like a really good way to just cut down on the calories, give your body a chance to break free from digesting all the time. And, you know, so basically you just want to have your two meals within that eight-hour period. So, you know, in this article that I was reading in the Times, they were talking about, you know, not eating after 8, and then you're available to eat again at 12. In my lifestyle, it's more like I would stop eating at 9 at night and eat lunch more like at 1. But either way, you know, just do the math. Try to, you know, not eat for 16 hours and see how it goes. But the studies are coming out that it's really healthy for your body. It's a way to get your weight in check and also keep yourself healthy. So check that out. Of course, you know, eating plant-based or plant-forward food is certainly the best. You don't want to then fill those two meals up with too much animal products, because that's certainly not a healthy thing for you or the planet. So you want to keep that in mind as well. I also wrote about gas and oil production being worse for the environment than we thought, although I guess maybe worse than many people thought, although I've been reading so much, I know how bad it is for the environment and how important it is for all of us to really push our governments to change and go towards more renewable energy sources. The leaking of the methane gas from the fracking that's being done is just horrible, and just this past weekend, there was a gas pipe leak in Mississippi that caused more than 300 residents that had to be evacuated, and over, I think, 50 people went to the hospital. So gas leaks just always happen. I mean, pipelines, if you just go and Google that, you would be astounded at how many gas pipes leak and break. And it's just, you know, common part of business, and we need to hold these gas and oil companies accountable for all these problems that come from the fracking that they're doing. Also, we have a big problem with our single-use plastic, which everybody has been hearing about, and the whole idea that we can recycle everything is really not true. Even if there's recycling numbers on your products, very often they're not being recycled anyway. And China, of course, doesn't want our garbage anymore, and most states don't want our garbage. So much of it's ending up in landfills and in the oceans. and we've been reading about our fish and our water. We've been reading that we all ingest about a credit card's worth of plastic every week. It's in our, the microbeads are in our water. It's in everything. They're putting microbeads in our cosmetics, and, you know, that's, those are just little particles of plastic that just are in everything. And it's not getting filtered out. So we really have a huge plastic problem. And there is a new Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act that was proposed by Senator Udall and Representative Lowenthal. That is the type of legislation we need, which really holds corporations accountable for their packaging. That when they put out products that are in packaging that cannot be recycled, that they need to develop a program to collect that those resources and find a way of disposing with them. I do not love the whole the Kara coffee and the Nespresso coffee, all those pods. Yet I do know that Nestle has come up with a recycling program for those pods. So they realize that those pods are a real pollution problem, and they have solutions to try to collect those. You know, in Switzerland, when we were over there, because Nestle is located right there in Vevey, they actually pick up the pods everywhere. You know, there's separate bins for them in every store and all over the place, and so it's really easy. Here it's not as easy, but they do pay for the shipping, and then you can ship the little pods back. So there is a way that these corporations can take responsibility for their packaging, and this proposed ban or pollution act is really a great way to do that. So on my website, I have a link to sign on to support this Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. So please check that out. I also put out a weekly newsletter. If you do not get it, please feel free to go onto my website at iegreen.com and sign up for my newsletter, where I list so many things going on in and around the New York area and other parts of the country as well, and share a lot of these issues and petitions that you can sign on and ways that you can get involved. And, of course, the most important thing is to make sure that everybody you know is registered to vote. This election is really going to be so important, and, you know, our current administration is constantly rolling back the calendar on all of the great legislation that has been passed with the Environmental Defense Fund and the Centers for Disease Control and just so many different bodies of legislation and committees that he has undone, that we really are not protected the way we need to be. So become involved. Make sure you're registered to vote. I want to share a couple things going on in and around the New York, Long Island area that you may want to go to. And I list all of these also on my website, so I don't want to take too much time with that. But there's a new nonprofit organization called Transition Town, Port Washington, and they are partnering with Slow Food in screening three films at the Port Washington Library. The first one is Paris to Pittsburgh, which will be on February 28th. And then the next one is on March 20th, which is a film called Just Eat It, a food waste story, and I'll be speaking following that one. And then the last one is on Earth Day itself, which is April 22nd, and that film is going to be Disobedience. So those are coming up that you probably want to come out and see if you're local, and if you're not, find these films somewhere local to where you do live, because they're all worthwhile seeing. The Peconic Land Trust, which is out on the east end of Long Island, they have a Grow lecture series. The first one is coming up on March 1st, and Patty Gentry, who is the farmer at Early Girl Farm, she will be speaking along with a chef from Stone Creek Inn and Will Peckett from West Robbins Oyster Company. And these are taking place at the Bridge Gardens in Bridgehampton. And there's a whole series of them, so you want to find out about those. On Sunday, March 8th, at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. They are screening a documentary film called Hands On, Women, Climate Change. And it is a brunch starting at 11, and then the film is at noon. And there's a panel discussion following that. So that should be a really great event. Again, that's Sunday, March 8th. So check that out. Then Long Island CSA Fair is coming up. This is being sponsored by Slow Food North Shore and NOFA New York. NOFA stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And myself with IE Green, we are organizing the Long Island CSA Fair, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. That is the best way for you to buy locally sourced, in-season organic vegetables that are harvested each week, and every week you will get a basket full of what they harvested that week. We will have over 20 farms under one roof where you can really shop around for the best CSA for your family. And when I mean the best CSA program, there's so many variables as to whether you have to pick it up at the farm or whether they have drop-off points that are closer to your home, whether they have community events that you can participate in, whether they have add-on products like flowers or meat or fish or cheese or bread or fruit. Many different farms offer different things. Some farms you can only buy a full share, which might be too much if you're only a family of one or two. So some farms offer half shares. Some half shares are a half portion every week, and some are a full share every other week. So, again, you really have to shop around, and the price varies as well. So come out to the Long Island CSA Fair, which will be taking place at the Sisters of St. Joseph in Brentwood on March 21st from 11 to 3, and that should be really a really great event. And now I want to share with you my recipe for the week. It's braised seitan with broccoli, shiitake mushrooms, and portobello mushroom medley. And seitan, for those who do not know, is wheat meat. It's the protein of wheat. So it's very high in protein, very low in fat, really great for you as long as you don't have a gluten allergy because it is straight gluten. So you want to buy one package of seitan. You want to buy the seitan that's in strips, not chunks, if you have a choice. You can also make seitan, and I have a recipe for making seitan on my website, or you can just Google it, and you can make your own seitan relatively easily as well. It takes time, but it's not difficult at all. And, of course, homemade seitan is really the best. But anyway, assuming you're going to buy one package of seitan, there's 8 ounces in a package. So you can buy one package, or you can even buy two packages, depending on how many people you're cooking for. One onion cut in half and then sliced into crescent moons. 2 to 3 carrots, depending on the size, cut into chunks. One head of broccoli cut into florets. 3 large portobello mushrooms sliced. 6 to 8 shiitake mushrooms, stems removed and sliced. 2 tablespoons grated ginger. 2 tablespoons chopped garlic. Olive oil for sautéing. 4 tablespoons tamari, and possibly more to taste. 1/4 teaspoon smoked paprika, 1 tablespoon dark sesame oil, 2 tablespoons aji marin, which is a sweet rice wine. Eden brand makes a very good one. You do not want to buy the Kikkoman aji marin because if you look at the ingredients, it's really just glucose syrup. It is really not rice wine, which is what aji marin is. You also want 1 teaspoon of hot sesame oil, which is optional, and 2 tablespoons of sesame seeds toasted. And you can buy sesame seeds already toasted, or you can toast your own in a cast iron frying pan. So you're going to start by covering the bottom of the wok with oil. And when the oil's hot, you can add the onions. Stir that up a bit, then add 1 tablespoon of the garlic and 1 tablespoon of the ginger root and the carrots. And cook that again for another 5 minutes or so on relatively high heat, stirring it constantly. Then add the broccoli, and you can add a little more oil if you need to, or you can add a little water. If you add 1 tablespoon of water at a time so that you're not boiling the vegetables, you really can actually sauté in oil. And it's a way of cutting down on how much oil you add to these dishes. So just add 1 tablespoon of oil at a time, and you continue sautéing. Cook those for a few more minutes, and when the broccoli starts getting soft, you can add the mushrooms and let those cook down for a few minutes. And when the mushrooms are all soft and cooked well, you can remove the vegetables from the wok. You don't even have to wipe out the wok. It's still good to go. Just take the vegetables out, add a little bit more oil to the bottom, add the remaining ginger and garlic to the wok, and then add the seitan. And you're going to sear the seitan in the hot wok in the oil for about 5 minutes. Then you're going to add the smoked paprika to that and cook that for a couple more minutes. Then splash another 2 tablespoons of tamari onto that seitan. And that's just going to sear it and, you know, give it a little smoked flavor. Then you can return the vegetables back to the wok, add the aji marin and another 2 tablespoons of tamari, and cook it all together and just let all those flavors meld together. Taste it and actually add the dark sesame oil first, then give it a taste. If you want to add hot sesame oil or red pepper flakes to the dish at this point to give it a little spice, you can do that. Or if it's perfect for you without that, just leave it alone. You can garnish it with the toasted sesame seeds. You can also garnish it with some fresh chopped parsley or cilantro, whichever you prefer. And that's it. Serve it up. You can serve it with some rice or some rice noodles, whatever you prefer. Of course, any grain would go wonderfully with it. And enjoy. I love feedback, so let me know if you do make it, how you like it. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest. As I mentioned, Nellie Thompson Kapoor is the executive director of Green Beets, and she is coming to us with over 10-plus years of experience in nonprofit world. She has her master's in public health and nutrition, and she just loves working at Green Beets, where they are educating mostly elementary and middle school kids about the benefits of eating well and educating them about what our modern food system looks like. So without any further ado, Nellie, are you with me?
I am. Hello.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Great. I don't know if you know, but I'm a bit in the same field as you. I am the farm-to-school coordinator at Glen Cove Public School, in addition to IE Green, and have really been loving getting into the classroom and working with the kids. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you as well. Maybe you can first start by just telling my listeners a little bit about about Green Beets and how you came to work there.
Sure. So Green Beets, we're a nonprofit organization, and essentially what we do is we provide a ready-to-teach curriculum. It's STEM-based, it's next-generation aligned, and we provide it to 4th through 7th grade teachers, and our curriculum is all about nutrition, health, and sustainability. So the idea is that we're teaching our students about the modern food system and how to make healthier food choices for their bodies and also for the environment.
And is the curriculum open to other people to use, or is it, you know, they have to sign on with you to get the curriculum? How does that work?
Sure. So typically, you know, those who are teaching our program are existing elementary or middle school teachers. So they're already in a classroom and they have a class full of students. They apply to teach our program through our website, www.greenbeets.org, and they have to fill out some basic questions, you know, why they might be interested in teaching the program, you know, tell us a little bit about their classrooms and about their schools. And at that point, we sort of make a decision as to whether or not we give them full access to our curriculum. But, you know, at the end of the day, our goal is to get, you know, the content of our lessons into the hands of more teachers so that more students can, you know, learn about food, learn about environmental science. And so, yes, I mean, we're open to sharing our curriculum. If you're out there and you're interested, you know, most certainly you should reach out to us.
Great. And does a school or a teacher actually sign up? And I assume there's some sort of fee that goes along with that to enroll. Is that correct?
Actually, that's a great question. So Green Beets was founded with the idea that, you know, with sort of through the lens of health equity. And it's always been really important to us as an organization that those who might not be able to have access to, you know, affordable, healthy food still have access to education and knowledge on these topics. So we actually offer our curriculum cost-free to schools, and we're really proud of that. And that's why we do have the application process, and, you know, teachers or principals, you know, they can apply, again, directly through our website. There's at greenbeats.org, and then there's a tab for teachers, and then it says apply now to become a Greenbeats teacher. And we'll review that, and if we think it's a compelling, you know, compelling application, of course, we'll give our curriculum, and it's cost-free for schools.
That's wonderful, because I know, like, the school district I'm in, you know, it's over 60% free and reduced. All of the elementary kids get free lunch, no matter where they fall in that affordability scale. And they're actually trying to get it for the middle school and high school as well, because there's a lot of kids in our district, you know, that are really struggling with their families and have no clue about healthy eating either. So this is really exciting. So can you share with us?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to add in, you know, we feel similarly, and actually, you know, students at our schools, we really target schools with our own outreach. We target schools that where the majority of students would qualify for free or reduced price lunch. And so, yeah, about 83% of the students in our schools do qualify for that. And, you know, that's, as you know, that's just really a proxy for whether or not they fall below the poverty line. So these are the kids that really need access to this information.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. So can you share with my listeners what role food plays in your life? Like, where do you come from in regards to food?
Well, I mean, I love food. I'm not going to lie. I was listening to your recipe earlier in the show, and I was salivating. It sounds so delicious. but food has always been really important to me. And, you know, about a little over 10 years ago, I was living down in D.C., and I was teaching cooking classes, healthy cooking classes to teens and recently immigrated populations. And it was through that initial experience that I just had such a deep appreciation for how food connects people, how food builds community, how food shapes our health, and our health shapes our life. And, you know, for me, there's no aspect of life that's sort of untouched by food. And thinking about the power of food to build a sense of self and a sense of culture and community is just endlessly interesting to me. So what I love about Greenbeats is that, you know, we're teaching through our curriculum everything that students would be learning in school otherwise. So, you know, because we're next generation aligned, which means that we're sort of meeting the academic standards, it's like the new Common Core. So we're teaching, you know, social studies, we're teaching reading, we're teaching math, and it's just all through the lens of food. And that's exciting because kids connect with food, and everyone eats. So, you know, it's something that we find kids get really excited about and they relate to, and especially, you know, in the New York City area, there's so much beautiful diversity, and so you have kids with all different types of food traditions. And so we really, you know, we work with that, and we encourage kids to get excited about that and to talk about it and to share, and through that we find that they really learn the concept well.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you target like fourth to seventh graders. Can you share why you target fourth to seventh graders? And also what makes your program stand out from, you know, there's so many other programs out there now. What is special about your program?
Sure. So when we originally conceived of the curriculum, we worked with the New York Academy of Sciences, and we decided to target the 4th through 7th grade age group because, well, really for two reasons. The first is that it's at this age that students or kids, I guess, for the first time start to make autonomous food decisions. So you think about maybe they're getting a little allowance from their parents and they can go to the bodega after school. You know, the power is in their hands to make food decisions. So we wanted to capture them at a time when, you know, we might be able to influence those decisions or help inform those decisions, right? Empower them with knowledge to make their own decisions. Excuse me. And then secondly, it's at that age, and research shows that kids start to reflect on their place in the world. They start to understand that their actions today have consequences for the future. And that's just, so, you know, we felt as we were developing this curriculum that it's a really powerful time to come in and say, hey, like, these kids are curious, they're becoming active learners, let's, you know, let's give them the knowledge and the information they need to make healthier decisions and to become, you know, responsible food citizens and stewards and of the environment, right? This is the next generation. They're going to be writing policy in, you know, so many years. So let's get in early and educate them about these really, what we feel are really important issues for our health and for the planet.
Mm-hmm. And so does the curriculum include a farm or a garden in each class? Are you doing growing towers or... Are, you know, what hands-on aspect are you doing, or is it just cooking? Not just.
Sure.
That's wonderful. Cooking.
Right. So we have the cooking. We love the cooking. So throughout the curriculum itself is very hands-on and activities-based. So for each lesson, there is an activity that kids can work on. It's not a requirement for us that schools who apply for the program have school gardens. And the reason for that is, you know, as I mentioned before, we're working with schools that are in underserved neighborhoods and communities. And for many of them, particularly in New York City, having a garden just isn't feasible. The school might not be able to afford maintenance of that garden. They may not physically have the space for a garden. So schools aren't required to have the garden, but we've included in our curriculum with each lesson what we call a garden extension. So for those schools that do have a garden, you know, they learn the lesson, and it's like, hey, go outside, and here's a suggested activity that you can do. We have teachers, you know, we have such incredible teachers, and some of them have taken the initiative to build their own gardens at the school and sort of take responsibility for maintaining them. We also have some teachers who have built hydroponic gardens in their classrooms, which is awesome. And, like, we go into the classroom, and it's just full of plants, and the kids are talking, and you know, fifth graders, fourth graders, sixth graders, like, they understand how a hydroponic garden works. So it's really a mixed bag, but overall, whether garden or no garden, the curriculum is packed with lots of activities to help, you know, especially for those who aren't necessarily read-write learners, like to have that hands-on experience to understand the lesson a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have found that the tower gardens or the hydroponic gardens are a little controversial. You know, some people think that, you know, if you don't have the soil, you're not really teaching about growing and the micronutrients that are in the soil and all the important lessons that happen actually beneath our feet. How do you compensate for that with a tower garden or hydroponics, or do you just not touch that?
Well, if I'm being I mean, I understand what you're talking about, and I've heard that before. I think when it comes down to it, hydroponic gardens, you know, to some are not perfect. You know, as GreenBeets, as an organization, we're not regulating how classrooms have hydroponic gardens or even how they talk about them per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for a lot of these kids who are really, like, their baseline of understanding how things grow in general is often pretty low. I think having any access to, you know, an in-classroom garden, if it has to be a hydroponic garden, I think that's a win.
Right. Better than nothing.
And certainly in the curriculum, we talk about soil. We talk about soil health. We talk about composting. You know, all of these things are built into the curriculum. But then the hydroponics are just an opportunity to sort of see things come to life, you know, in the classroom. And certainly there can be, you know, it's an opportunity for a discussion around that. And what is the difference between a hydroponic garden and, you know, a garden grown in vegetables that are grown in soil? This is an exciting opportunity to start a conversation with students about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your favorite aspect of the GreenBeets curriculum?
Ooh, there's so many things I love about it, but I think, you know, for me, what I think, and this is sort of to touch on your earlier question, there are a ton of nutrition education programs out there, and some of them, and many of them, are excellent. And, you know, this is a collaborative effort. We're all kind of working towards the same goal here. But what I think sets GreenBeets apart is, you know, we're really looking at the intersection of healthy eating and nutrition and sustainability in the environment. So those two are so closely intertwined, and, you know, there's increasing evidence coming out, and you see more and more articles about the connection between food and about climate change. And GreenBeets explores that. And you know, food doesn't exist in a vacuum. Climate change doesn't exist in a vacuum. And so the idea is that we're we're talking about things in a very holistic and integrated way. Our curriculum has four different modules. We talk about food in the body. We talk about food in the environment. We talk about the big business of food, so helping kids understand, you know, some of the more pernicious marketing practices that are out there. And then finally, we do cooking basics and the culture of food. So it's really this sort of systems-based, holistic approach that I think makes Green Beets really special as a curriculum. And, you know, I also want to add that the curriculum is really fun. Our students love it. Our teachers love it. You know, we get, you know, our teachers tell us that their students are like, when are we doing Green Beets? It's just, you know, none of this matters, and education doesn't matter if it's not engaging and if it's not, you know, it's not fun for the kids. And I feel really proud that we've gotten such a positive response from our teachers, our educators, and from our kids about how much they like the curriculum.
That's so important, like you were saying. And I think these days kids don't get enough hands-on opportunities in classrooms. You know, so much is book learning and, you know, not getting up and really doing with their hands. So I think the more hands-on activities we can incorporate into curriculum, and also we all have heard about, you know, students are different types of learners, you know, not everyone learns in the same way. So it's good to mix it up and to have different learning ways built in. So that's
absolutely
really wonderful. So I want to hear some of your favorite stories about some of the students you're working with, but before we do that, we're going to take a couple minute break, and when we come back, maybe you can share some stories of some of the students you've worked with. So
great.
Everyone listening, if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Nellie Thompson Kapoor. She's the executive director at Green Beets, and of course I'm Bhavani at IE Green, and we'll be right back.
I'm Gary Nall, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your source for news and information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Nellie Thompson Kapoor. She's the executive director of Green Beets, which is a nonprofit organization that's teaching curriculum and teaching about our food system to mostly 4th to 7th graders in the New York City area. So, Nellie, right before the break, I was asking you if you could maybe share with us a couple stories with some of the students that you work with and how this program may have impacted their lives.
Sure, yes. You know, I think for me, and one of the most exciting things about this organization is seeing kids sort of from the start of the curriculum to the end, making this transformation of starting to, first of all, getting their hands on real fresh produce for the first time and what that experience is like, you know, and seeing sort of what their ideas or preconceived notions about food might be, how those change. And, you know, our curriculum is 21 lessons, and the 21st lesson, which comes at the end of the year, is a celebration of food. And classrooms have the option of doing one or two things. The first is they could go to a local farmer's market and get a local farmer's market tour. It's called our Farmer's Market Farewell. Or alternatively, we have, you know, we deliver a bunch of fresh produce from a CSA to their classroom, and then kids will actually set up their very own farmer's market within their classroom. Both are great, and kids love it. They get sort of hands-on, tangible food experience. And last May, a story that I love is, you know, last May I was visiting one of our classrooms in West Harlem, and they had set up this farmer's market in the classroom. The kids, it's bustling. Kids are sort of, you know, they set up price tags for all the different foods. They're selling the different foods to each other. It's, like, super noisy, but very energetic. And, you know, I can't help but notice, I look over in the corner, and there's this one young boy. He's a fourth grader. And he's just sitting there kind of quietly and pensively, and he's looking at, he has in front of him a peach, a tomato, and some scallions. And, you know, I'm kind of observing him, and I watch him first take a bite of the peach. And his face lights up. He's like, this is, you know, the sweetness, this is delicious. Puts it down, takes a bite of the tomato, same thing. He's like, you know, this is delicious. And then finally, I'm like, is he going to eat that scallion? Like, is he just going to go and just, like, go at it, right, take a bite? And he did. And I watched him pick it up, and he kind of nibbled on the, you know, the dark green portion of the scallion, and then kind of worked his way down and just, like, was sort of nibbling on it. And his eyes lit up. And, you know, kids, I think, you know, get conditioned to think that certain foods are weird or they're disgusting, and especially when it comes to vegetables, or it might be a strong flavor. But when you expose them to these foods in a safe environment where they're encouraged to try new things, and where they're, you know, they're encouraged to think more deeply about, you know, where that food is grown and where, you know, and how it's in front of them, and how special food can be, they love it. And, you know, there he was, like, you know, eating a raw scallion. I guess I'd eat a chopped scallion, right? But, like, eating it straight, that's, you know, that's right, really something. And, you know, I think we underestimate kids and sometimes, and, you know, they love to try new things. They're so curious. And we just, you know, get the food in front of them, give them the knowledge, and let them run with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Has Green Beets been able to impact the kids when they get home? You know, it's like, it's one thing to have this in the school, but for a lot of the kids I know in my school district who are going home to empty refrigerators, how does some of the information that they're learning in the school, have you seen it transfer over into the home environment?
Right. I mean, you make a really good point. So, you know, we're working in underserved communities, and the truth is, you know, a lot of our kids don't have access to healthy and affordable food, and that is a systemic problem that, you know, needs to be addressed,
right,
from a policy standpoint. I mean, if, you know, we could have a whole, you know, tougher hours about that single topic.
Right.
I think, and Green Beets, so we are an education program. We feel like we're trying to do our part when it comes to teaching kids in the classroom, but certainly we're encouraging kids to go home and have conversations with their parents or their guardians about this. You know, we also provide resources to parents about, you know, how to apply for SNAP benefits. We provide them with farmers markets maps so that they, you know, they get an idea of, you know, if there's a local farmers market in their area, how to get Health Bucks, which is a New York City program that is sort of a coupon. So for every, if you qualify for SNAP, for every $5 you spend on produce, you'll get a $2 additional coupon to spend on fruits and vegetables. So as an organization, we're doing, you know, we're really working hard on the education piece, and we're trying to support kids and their parents at home. And then I would say, aside from that, you know, as far, we like to partner with and sort of put our name behind like-minded organizations who are actively advocating for better food access and affordability and for more comprehensive school wellness policies. So some of our partners include the Well Campaign, the New York City Healthy School Food Alliance, and the New York City Food Ed Coalition. So these are some great organizations that are working hard and tirelessly to increase affordability and access to healthy food. And in the meantime, we're trying to support our parents and provide additional resources. We're constantly thinking about what additional resources we can provide for parents that will make this all a little bit easier for them.
Right. Well, I think the whole, the knowledge about the health bucks, I was reading about how many of them are not claimed. I mean, how many health bucks they give out that people just don't even use. I don't think people fully understand that, for every $5 they use at a farmer's market for produce, they would get $2 worth of free product. So, that is really a great service to help make people aware of that because, these are programs that the city has that are unclaimed. There's also pharmacy. Did you hear about that?
A
program.
Yes, the pharmacy to farm.
Right, where, you can get a prescription for an extra $30 a month, I think, of produce.
It's great.
Right. So that's wonderful, to share that kind of stuff with your families, beyond just the kids. One thing that I was noticing in your curriculum that I think is really great and I wanted to talk about a little bit is because many programs talk about food and the environment and how it affects our body, but I think the whole idea about talking about the big business of food, you're getting kids at a really great age where they don't want to be manipulated. They're getting smart enough to know that, to really look at what they're being told and to question things. Like you're talking about autonomy, taking things that they're learning and trying to make their own sense of it. Can you talk a little bit about the big business of food and how, how you're teaching kids how they're being manipulated, that kind of thing?
Sure. Yes. No, I this is a great, one of my favorite modules within the curriculum, and I think it's so important. And, kids don't let them fool you. You kind of take that angle with them, and it's like, this is what they're doing. They're trying to manipulate you. You're better than this, and you don't have to succumb to that manipulation. So I think, within the curriculum, we, talk a lot about the bigness of the food. We show a lot of examples of marketing, and, we're working in a lot of communities where, communities of color, and so there's a lot of these these businesses have increased targeting at those neighborhoods. There are more ads for sugary cereals, et cetera, within those neighborhoods. And so it's really we do some exercises to show kids examples and say, you might not think that this is tricking you, but it might be. And we have kids come up with their own advertisements. And we also have them practice making advertisements for healthy foods as well. So they have the advertisements and how they have to point out where they're being manipulated within the unhealthy advertisement. And then they have to sort of counterbalance that by creating advertisements for healthy foods and saying, we also talk a lot about sort of some of the language that's on packaging. So you might see it says light or it says natural or it says, there are all these sort of catchphrases that you see on packaging that can be really misleading. And so we also do some deep discussions around that and help kids understand that just because it's written on a package, you have to read the nutrition label. You have to read the ingredient list, and those are the only ways they're going to really understand what's in the food that you're eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that's so confusing, I think, for kids, at least in our district, is they actually do have what they call healthy snacks, right? So after the kids get their lunch, if they brought in money, they can buy these a la carte healthy snacks. And what they are things like Doritos and potato chips and things that are reformulated, a little bit less oil, a little bit less salt, although the sugar content is very often increased in order to make it still taste good. But the packaging looks very similar to what's out there on the market. So they don't really understand that it's different. So they get Doritos at school that might be reformulated, but then they go out into the public and they're like, oh, I can have this. It's a healthy snack. It's Doritos. You know, and they don't realize that it's a different Dorito. And, you know, so part of the marketing that these companies are doing is making the packaging look the same, you know, or to, you know, get kids to like something. They have to go for this fast food look packaging, you know. And, you know, and it's really hard to decipher what's really healthy and what's not.
It really is. And, you know, these corporations, they know what they're doing. You know, they're smart. They're formulating these foods in a very specific way. And I agree with you. I mean, it might say low fat, but you better believe there's going to be increased sugar or increased sodium in that product so that the flavor profile is what they want it to be. It can be really dangerous for these kids. And, you know, obviously within our curriculum, we're always pushing away from processed food in general and encouraging them to eat, you know, the more natural you can go in explaining the difference between, you know, whole foods versus processed foods. And, you know, the nutritional benefit of that and all, and sort of some of the environmental piece of that as well. I completely agree with you. It's an uphill battle. But we're doing what we can to just try to educate kids.
And has green beets been able to affect any change in the food that's being offered to the kids at the school, like in the lunchroom, or you just stay separate from that?
So, as a program, we are not super involved in what is served in the cafeterias. We encourage students, and we're actually working on some activities to roll out for the upcoming school year, sort of advocacy activities to sort of prepare kids and encourage them to go to their principal or go to whoever is in leadership at their school and propose changes for healthier cafeteria food or, you know, how to write to your local congressperson. So we're trying to encourage kids to be advocates within their environment. But I think, you know, the way that we can best support at this point that type of movement, we obviously believe in serving healthier cafeteria food, is by supporting organizations whose sole focus is to do just that. So, you know, the New York City Healthy School Food Alliance, for example, that is what they're focused on, and they're pushing towards healthier food in cafeterias and more comprehensive school wellness policies. So we put our name behind those organizations and, you know, advocate as much as we can.
Yeah, I know the Coalition for Healthy School Food is also doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know them?
Yes.
So beyond the classroom, what other work is Green Beets doing?
So, you know, I mentioned some of the policy piece that that I think is certainly a part of our mission, even though we're not ourselves doing it. I think improving the health of our students and sort of mitigating the impact of climate change is a beast and requires a lot of players from many different fields tackling the issue. I just want to emphasize that, you know, education is one piece of the puzzle, and I feel very strongly that it's an important piece of the puzzle. But it's, you know, thinking about this in like a very holistic way and what other organizations can we partner with, can we support to sort of push the agenda of creating a healthier food landscape for our kids and for the next generation. We feel as an organization very committed to that, are doing what we can to help promote change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, starting with the kids, that's one of the beauties of starting while the kids are young, because then by the time they, you know, get up into the high school, you know, they really can do some more advocacy work and really, you know, push a little bit more and get involved in more of the end result of what they're being fed at the school. And, you know, and you hope you give them, you know, the feeling of empowerment so that they are willing to take those chances and go out there and try to make some change, because we need them all to do that. Right?
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. So just in case anybody did not hear our question at the very beginning, can you share with my listeners in the hopes that we have some teachers or schools that will be hearing this, how can they get involved and how can they find out more about your curriculum and signing up? And is it limited to just New York City schools or like, you know, my school that's on Long Island, can we participate? How does that work?
Sure, absolutely. So I'll start by saying that our applications is still open for this school year. So many teachers can, you can teach our curriculum from start to finish in just a few months. So if, you know, you're still interested in teaching for this academic school year, you know, please don't hesitate to apply. To apply, you can just go directly to our website. It's www.greenbeets.org, and that's Green Beets is spelled B-E-E-T-Z, so greenbeets.org. And there's a tab right up there on the upper right-hand corner. It says Teachers. Click on that, and it will say Apply Now to Become a Green Beets Teacher. And you'll see on the website it will sort of walk you through the steps of what's involved in the process, but it's pretty straightforward. You submit a very simple application directly through our website. We'll review it, and we'll let you know relatively quickly whether or not we feel you're a good fit for the program. And, you know, I think it's showing enthusiasm for the topic and, you know, wanting to teach your kids about these things is really what we're looking for the most from our teachers and our schools, and it's just a commitment to teaching these issues. And essentially, we'll give you access to our teachers portal, which has our curriculum. It has additional resources for teachers. There are some videos if you want some support on how to teach the curriculum, and then you're off and running. You know, we're available to provide TA. There's no cost to the program, as I mentioned. And, you know, currently we are in 40 schools across New York City. We're in 136 classrooms across all 5 boroughs. But if you're a school that is sort of outside of the New York City area, please I encourage you to apply. We're very open to accepting applications outside of New York City. So, you know, don't let that stop you. Our goal at the end of the day is to get this curriculum in the hands of as many teachers and the students as possible.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I'm loving about this program is that you're using the teachers that are already in the classroom, because many of the programs, they train their own teachers, and those teachers have to come into the classroom. That's a whole nother logistical nightmare, right? Trying to get enough teachers and trying to get them out to a school district in, you know, the boondocks in Long Island. Actually, not really the boondocks, but you're New York City based, you know, you're not going to get people out on the island. And so, I love that you're taking the teachers that are already there. They already have a curriculum that they have to meet, and you can incorporate this curriculum into the already existing STEM curriculum that they have to teach to, so that they're not, it's just, you know, what topics they're teaching or, you know, how they're going about teaching, so that they're doing it through the lens of healthy food, like you were saying earlier. And I just love that. So I'm really excited. I'm going to spread the word.
Yes, please do. We welcome all educators. And even if you run an after-school program and you're interested in teaching this, we have some after-school programs that run the curriculum as well, or a summer camp. It actually, the curriculum works really nicely for summer camps. So that's an option as well. So, you know, please, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to me. My email is Nellie, N-E-L-L-I-E, at greenbeets.org. I'm available to answer any emails, jump on the phone if you have questions. I love to talk about the program.
Thank you.
I'm just so grateful to have this opportunity to chat with you and, a fellow fighter in this fight for, you know, food justice.
Yeah, we need it, and our kids need it so badly. So the last question I have for you, because we are getting towards the end, how do you support yourself? If you offer all this beautiful, wonderful educational material for free to schools, where do you make your money? Are you funded by grants? Are you... do you need people to donate? How does that work?
Sure. So, good question. None of this could happen without, you know, some very generous support that we feel. We're supported by a combination of foundation funding and individual donors. And, you know, this is, as for a nonprofit, this is part of the work. It's really important for us to try to keep our curriculum cost-free. And so we have events, we have, you know, fundraising events, we try to encourage people, if they care about these issues, to give to the cause. And if this cause resonates with you, you know, we're so grateful for those who have supported us and continue to support us. If you would like to donate to Green Beats, you can do so directly on our website. There's a donate button right there, and we're super grateful. You know, we want to continue to offer this, again, cost-free for our families and our students, and we do depend on support from people.
And do you have any events coming up that you want to share with my listeners?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, we have an upcoming event in April. The date is to be determined. It's actually, we're partnering with J. Crew at Columbus Circle, so it's in Manhattan. And essentially we're going to set up a little booth there. And for anyone who attends the event, it's a family friendly event. Anyone who attends the event, they will receive a discount off of anything they purchase at J. Crew that day. Details are forthcoming, and we'll keep it posted on our website. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, which is a really nice way to keep in touch with what we're up to and with upcoming events, et cetera. And you just go straight to our website at the bottom, and we send out a monthly newsletter that has all the good stuff you might want to know.
Good. Well, I'll do that, and I'll make sure I share any events that you have coming up with my listeners so they'll know. But, Nellie, I want to thank you. We are just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for the work you're doing, for your enthusiasm to get these kids eating better and expanding their knowledge about our food system. It's all so good and so important. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And everybody out there who's been listening, thank you for joining us. Check out my website and sign up for my newsletter as well at ieatgreen.com. And I'll see you all again next week. Have a wonderful week. Bye for now.